Suicide is preventable. Most suicidal individuals desperately want to live, they're just unable to see alternatives to their problems. If you're struggling or are worried about a loved one, please reach out. In the United States, you can call 1-800-273-TALK. Or you can visit IASP.info for suicide prevention hotlines around the globe. Somebody will be there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You are never alone, no matter how dark or lonely things may seem. Call 1-800-273-TALK or visit IASP.info. That's 1-800-273-TALK or IASP.info.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscured. Look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
I'm gonna take a bath. Nothing's gonna stop me.
And our next game is Star Ocean, The Second Story. It was nominated to us by Mr. Joe 2004 on iTunes, developed by Triace, published by Enix in Japan and Sony Computer Entertainment America in the US. It was first released on the PlayStation 1, and that was... Oh, crap, we changed the to numbers. All right, July 30th, 1998. And with me to talk about Star Ocean today are...
Kurt Kalata, Disco Alucard.
And I'm the Great Clade.
And so we are talking about one of the more popular and famous PlayStation 1 RPGs, right? This is the JRPGs. It's the business. The series that I always knew the name of, but had no idea what it was about. And now I know a little bit more about what it's about. Does anyone know a lot more about what it's about? I know someone does.
Okay, so it's about a giant energy ball going to eat all of humanity.
Is that the plot?
Yeah.
Well, it's a JRPG.
Okay, so it's about... You're the son of a famous Star Federation.
Whoa! I know there's two playable characters. Don't trip me up already.
There are kind of two.
Sure, you have the playable character, and the you pick her, and the game just tells you, but why?
I picked her.
Yeah, I saw that. Okay, so there are two playable characters.
Not my problem. The game stupid choices.
You have Claude C. Kenny, son of the. Well, sort of like a minor character in the first Star Ocean, playable, but I don't remember him doing a whole lot.
He's one of the, not one of the major characters, but he's one of the, I don't know, he's there, he's part of it.
Yeah, and then he becomes like the name that everything rotates around for the rest of the series. It's kind of awesome. But, and then you have the girl who lives on the magical world that the Star Federation guy ends up on.
Oh, well, let's first introduce what Star Ocean is, which basically basically Star Trek, the JRPG.
For half of it.
Yeah, for half of it. I mean, like, don't go into it thinking that it's a sci-fi role-playing game, because it's not really... most of its levels take place in, like, fantasy sort of universes, so it's still definitely swords and sorcery.
And that's but the kind of interesting gimmick about this one, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's set up like Star Trek, like, especially the original Star Ocean... which it takes place on this like an undiscovered world, and then they get inflicted by this terrible pox, and then basically the Star Trek Federation shows up, and they have to transport them back through time in order to stop everything and then save the universe. And then, like you're saying, Claude is the son of one of the characters from that game.
I also really like how the first Star Ocean is just essentially Tri-Ace remaking Tales of Phantasia.
It's not even really... Okay, so the story with the development behind this game, which I would love to know more about, was that there's a Wolf Team, which was a part of Telenet way back in the 90s. They were contracted to make a game called Tales of Phantasia for Namco. And they were just like a small independent, like kind of did whatever they want sort of team. And a bunch of them weren't so happy with the corporate rule. So three of them came out. They're like, we're going to make our own damn Tales of Phantasia game and form Tri-Ace. And their first game, which came out so quickly that I almost assumed that they were probably working on the game when they should have been working on Tales of Phantasia, was Star Ocean for the Super Famicom, which has a lot in common with Tales of Phantasia, even though they're still very different games.
Yeah. Pretty much the same plot, though.
Yeah, I mean, it is sort of similar in that it involves time travel. It has a real-time battle system. They have sort of a skill system, but it's much more in-depth than Star Ocean. But there are definitely some pretty substantial differences, and they evolved much differently. Oh, Namco being a super corporate thing, they turned it into their yearly RPG series, and it's been churned out, and there's, God, but like 15 or 16 different entries at this point. Tons and tons of spin-offs. And then Star Ocean, there's just five of them, and then the Game Boy Color game and like the mobile game. So it's Tri-Ace's major series.
Okay, so if we're going to talk about Tri-Ace and Star Ocean, we should mention that this is probably the most Tri-Ace, like this is the core Tri-Ace game. It's got skills out the ass. That's the best way to describe Tri-Ace.
I will have to get you to, at some point, maybe not this exact second, but we'll have to explain, like, what makes the skills and stuff in this game interesting. Because I could see that there was, like, you just learn a bunch of arbitrary crap. Like, you can learn cooking and kniving and, like, being handsome and stuff, which is...
So we don't forget, I'll kind of hit on that. So when you say arbitrary, it's really almost not. This game, this is, like... Kurt might have to back me or correct me on this one, but this might be one of the first really big item creation games. You can make like a lot of things in this game. Everything from like 18 million kinds of food. You can make like health potions. You can make what are those things in Lunar? The lithographs or whatever? The like the little picture, the trading cards with all the people on them.
Yeah, I can't remember what they're called, but I know what you're talking about.
Like, you can make those in the game, you can find those in the game. It's ridiculous, the amount of items in this game. And a great deal of them are useless. A great deal of them appear useless until you get to the endgame content. And then, like, I think for one of the final bosses, you have to make a particular... Or not one of the final... One of the bonus bosses, you have to make a particular musical instrument just to be able to fight her. What else is there? Oh, and then there's the items that you have to create to make, like, you can make your own weapons in this game. And going off of that, Tri-Ace has a particular problem with being really unbalanced. Like, you can make the best weapon in the game 10, 15 hours in if you know exactly what you're doing.
This is kind of the reason, like, just to back up, like, I bought this game back when it came out in 1999, and it was the, it was like the summer before Final Fantasy VIII came out, so it was just something I was sort of to get to, like, kind of bust time between that game, and then I ended up really enjoying it, but there were some aspects that really annoyed me about it, because, you know, it was the first Tri-Ace game that ever came out here, and I wasn't really familiar with how they worked as far as their skills, because, like, when you talk about the skill set, they're it's a lot more than just, like, a branch you would find in an average JRPG. Like, a lot of the skills are non-combat based, which are closer to what you would find in a Western RPG. And so you have characters that learn how to play music. I can't even remember. There's so many skills that at the outset don't seem to be very useful. So when I played the game, I just was like, I don't care about any of this crap. I'm just going to focus on all the combat stuff. And then, of course, by the time that I got to the end game, I didn't realize that there was all this stuff that you were supposed to be doing in order to get the items you need to beat the game. Because, I mean, the game isn't that difficult up until right at the end where it just
hits
a massive, massive difficulty bump. And I was never able to beat the game.
That last boss is amazing. Like, because I didn't play these until the PSP games came out. Like, I was just wandering around Target or something one day, and the first game was sitting there on the shelves for the PSP. I'm like, huh, this looks kind of cool. And then I was hooked, and I was anxiously watching for the second game to finally come out.
Oh, we should probably back up and just talk about like the actual story, since we've already gotten in the So you're the son of the guy from the first origin, which is mildly important. And you can continue on because I've half forgot it.
Okay, so the story is it kind of like Cal was talking about. You sort of start off like you're part of like a Star Federation group, and they're investigating this portal thing, you're the son of this major captain or whatever he is in the Star Federation. And then naturally, as JRPGs go, you kind of bump this thing and whoops, now you're warped into some magical planet. And it turns out that this magical planet has all kinds of problems. One of them is there's a prophecy, and this is sort of the big, like, first half of the game. There's a prophecy about a hero with a sword of light, and it turns out that you fit that prophecy with your laser gun.
It's a really nice setup. Like, I thought, ooh, I love that part.
Yeah. So the Star Ocean sort of has, like, two halves to each game. There's the fantasy half, and then there's the everything to do with the space and science fiction half. And this might be the best game where that really kind of lines up, because it turns out, can I talk about, like, how they connect, or is that too spoilery for a 20-year-old game?
Probably not.
Yeah, it's maybe a little too spoilery, and I wouldn't even call them halves. It's because it's really it's much more fantasy than sci-fi, even though the sci-fi part does play a part in it.
So, okay, I'll kind of jump to the end. Turns out that I'm not going to actually get to the ending. I'm just going to kind of jump to where it sort of ends up where you're really involved yourself in some really big sweeping plans for like the universe, and it ramps up as it goes along, and it's super cool. The last, like, your last group of bosses are the wise men, and they're so much fun. I love those guys. I could talk about them for hours, but Cal and Kurt won't let me.
Definitely not. But what I would like to hear a little bit about is when I played this, the combat started up and I immediately got my ass totally beat instantaneously. I did kind of figure it out, but it's a little different to JRPG combat that I'm used to. It's like a mostly real-time system, and you have like a battlefield.
So it's a little like Secret of Mana. It's not, because Tales up until recently had this thing called the linear motion battle system, where you're sort of on a rubber band to the enemy. You'd like bounce away, bounce back, and attack them. Star Ocean would let you actually run up and around and out and everything else. So you were almost playing something like Secret of Mana, where you were just plopped on a square of land, and Star Ocean even would put like terrain in the game, so you'd have to run around rocks. The one thing about Star Ocean in particular about the battle system never liked is that it pauses for spells. It's really weird. I don't remember. Have you played the PSP version lately, Kurt?
Yeah, that was the last one I played. The original Tales games did that too, though.
Well, no, I know. I was thinking, but did the PSP version of Star Ocean 2 pause for spells as well?
Yeah. Okay. Same way there.
Okay, because Tales games don't do that, so you just...
Yeah, I remember it because I was playing the PSP version of Tales of Phantasia, and one of the changes that they made to the most recent version is that it doesn't pause spells, because it's more like the more recent games, but that kind of breaks the balance of the game, so...
Yeah, it probably does, now that I think about it. But yeah, no, that's the one really janky thing about Star Ocean 2 is combat, is that... it pauses during spells, and there's like a point sort of at the end of the beginning where your party is three spellcasters and Claude.
Well, which version? I mean, you said you were playing the PSP version, right?
I've played both now.
Okay.
I've never finished the PlayStation 1 version, but I've completed the PSP version.
And Cal, you're playing the PS1 version, right?
Yeah, I played the PlayStation 1 version. I think that was the one we had nominated to us. I think
they're
in this particular game's
similar.
Case, yeah, we can... basic
rank
on
them together,
yeah,
because the combat's a little smoother in the PSP version, because in the PS1 version you can only like swipe once at a time, and the PS version adds in combos, so it's a little bit smoother.
You get those later on in the PS1 version.
Oh yeah, but it's just like feels nice, because I remember at the beginning of the game you can go whap whap whap.
Yeah,
and I think it, just like the way that the movement worked, it was kind of weird. Like you had to hold down the square button or something strange like that to move around the field in the PlayStation 1 version.
No.
Or like you needed to, like, that was the default.
Right.
Because in the original Star Ocean, you can't run around the battlefield.
Oh, okay. See, I've never played the original Star Ocean. I've only played the PSP version.
Yeah, it was interesting that they actually marketed this as Star Ocean, the second story, because, of course, right? The first Star Ocean never came out here. And of course, it was, you know, came out in the wake of Final Fantasy VII, which was them admitting, yeah, there were a bunch of Final Fantasy games that never came out here. We're just sort of catching up. The thing was, even at that point in like 97, 98, there were emulators. I think there may have been fan translations for like Final Fantasy II and III and V, but people kind of knew about the missing games. Star Ocean wasn't really in the same thing, because even though they were Super Nintendo emulators, it had a special decompression chip. So you could fit more graphics onto the ROM. And so you couldn't emulate it for at least a couple more years.
And I remember that one also being kind of a tricky one to translate at the time.
Yeah, it eventually came out.
Yeah, it's out or whatever. I've played a little bit of that, like a little bit of that. So,
and it's one of those things that, since they're mostly separate, so the only thing you really miss out on is like knowing who Ronix or Renixis or whatever they translate his name as.
Yeah,
which is, you know, Claude's father, and Leon, one of the kids you meet later on, is a Felpool, which is the race of guys that were like, that where the original Star Ocean takes place on. They're little
never
cat
made
people.
That connection. Oh, I forgot, because they show up again in 4 too, and I always forget that they show back up in 2.
Yeah, I like the way that 2 expanded the universe from the first one, because the first one just took place on this one planet and intersecting with the humans, and the second one takes place on this other, the Need, I think it was called, and most of the Needian there are like elf creatures, but there's a couple of other races that come up, like whatever those three-eyed people are. There's a dozen different characters in this game. So
can we quick hit on that really quick? So because one of my favorite things about the PlayStation 1 version is the translation.
but why?
It's terrible. It's really, me and Cal were talking about this once. It's both simultaneously completely like garbage, and at the same time, it's like, wait, but a human had to have done this.
That's kind of what Sony was like. Like they didn't know what they were doing with Final Fantasy VII. They didn't know what they were doing. Like Grandia, they did later. That was better, but not good.
Sony translated this. That makes Meg Dragoon so much more sense, because that's another game where it's like this has the worst translation, but you can clearly tell it wasn't computer.
Because they just gave someone it to probably, like, wasn't maybe a native English speaker.
No.
Or somebody who was, but they just didn't go through the process of actually editing it to make the writing like decent.
I'd give that an 80.
Oh, because there's most of the game isn't voice acted except for in battles.
Yeah.
And they obviously didn't have the budget to hire real voice actors. So everybody,
I think
the
translator did the voices.
Yeah.
That's the level of quality.
And the recording quality is atrocious too. And like nothing about it sounds
right. And the game
right.
collects voices. It was proud of them.
It was proud of the Japanese version, because
I'm sure, yeah,
they hired like actual, you know, famous people to do that. But that obviously is not the same thing here.
And that little fun fact for the readers, the game has 3 difficulty modes, but you can't pick them until you've discovered enough of the voices.
Yeah, that's a very Tri-East thing. There's so many, so much obscure, strange things that Tri-East did, which was one of the reasons that this game infuriated me when I first came out.
Oh, man, this was just crack for my brain when I was 15.
But, this is especially the thing in the first Ocean. Like, when I used to play PS1 RPGs, like, I would never play them again. I'd play it through once, and then that would be it. In this game, Star Ocean 2 isn't that long, but it definitely is a game that's built for replayability, because at the beginning of the game, you could choose between Claude and then Reyna, who offers slightly different stories. Like, it's not a major thing. Like, Claude is clearly intended to be the main character, and Reyna was just a kind of an afterthought, even though it was a nice sort of idea.
But go ahead.
There are different characters that you can find based off of which you choose, and there are different characters that you can find based on other decisions, and they are mutually exclusive. You cannot get every character in this game in a single run.
You can't get the Edgelord as Claude, whatever his name is.
Oh, is that Diaz?
Yeah, yep. You can't get him as Claude. And he seems so, like, he seems like every other JRPG guy. We're like, oh, well, he's clearly supposed to be antagonizing us, but now eventually he'll join, and you're playing Claude's story, and he just gets completely forgotten halfway through the game.
Yeah, that's one of those consequences of trying to do branching multi-scenarios, and then there's just not...
So that does mind me.
Private actions.
Yeah, private actions. Those are something that this game... Is that unique to this game, or was it in Star Ocean?
That was in Star Ocean.
Yeah, but is it in the original version of Star Ocean?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It's in every version after this as well. In this game in particular, I know that it can be, once again, obscure Chae stuff, and the real mode of the final boss is hidden behind doing a private action well before you'd think it's connected.
Oh, a private action is when you go into a town and you're like, okay, let's everybody else just kind of split up, and then you can sort of talk to the other characters around there. And a lot of the hidden sub-scenarios require that you do specific things during these private actions. And it was something that Square obviously ripped off when Final Fantasy IX came out.
They
offered something pretty similar.
The scenario, I forgot about that. But yeah, so this is, and not to spoil, blah, blah, blah. It kind of hints at some of these private actions on some of this bigger plot going on throughout the game. Like, you run into some people who aren't supposed to be there. Like, whatever her name is. The translation between the two versions is so different that I can't think of names ever.
The only one I can give you is Jules.
Jules, yeah, well... Because I think, well, all the wise men are all completely different.
Yes, because they were originally supposed to be, like, biblical names
that
the final... they couldn't use in the PlayStation version. I don't remember if they...
Why not?
They were still uncomfortable about using this sort of, you know,
Christian-related stuff. Because Xenogears came out, like, a month later.
Yeah, and everybody was scared that Xenogears wasn't going to get localized, and everybody's like, they're so brave that they did.
Okay, because I was six in 1998, so I don't remember Xenogears coming out.
Oh, yeah, I remember. It was also kind of around the same time Evangelion was coming out on video.
Oh, did we get that at the time?
Evangelion.
I mean, we got Evangelion sometime after.
Well, I mean, like, sometime after.
But it took it out, but I mean, like, I remember I was in high school in, like, 98, 99, going out to Saturday matinee, getting to dub cassettes until we got, like, the whole thing.
I was going to say, did you guys get it after us? Because I know it aired pretty early on in Australia, because we
had... It aired?
Yeah, it aired.
Oh, you know, I think Pitchfork has told me that it aired here, or he's talked about it.
We have, like, I'm going to call it a foreign language channel, and it's because we have a multicultural population, so that's called SBS, and they aired Evangelion at one point. I've got a story about it, but this is about Star Ocean.
Well, yes, but it's relevant to the... Because like I said, they're all biblical. Like, one of the guys is named Gabriel, Balthazar, you know, like the Chrono Trigger names, really. And then, yeah, like, it's Indalatio, and I forget what they came everybody else. But whenever I, like, sit, it's almost like when Street Fighter 2 players are talking, it's like, oh, yeah, and the sweet strat with Balrog. I'm like, wait. And you have, like, some guys like, wait, which one's Balrog again? And somebody, and I'll read something about, like, Indalatio, and it's like, wait, which one was he again?
I think the main characters are mostly the same, because the main characters are Claude and Reyna, and they're always with you. And then after that, there's, Ash, I think was his name is?
Is he the guy with the dragons on his shoulders?
The guy with the dragons. He's kind of one of the first ones you get.
He's cool.
There was Celine, I think her name is.
Oh,
Magic
User. That's Jules. Celine Jules.
There was Opera, I think her name is. The three-eyed girl with the guns. I never got her because, like, again, I didn't realize how this game worked as far as getting characters. So I think I'd seen her in the manual and then didn't realize that I had made it impossible to ever get her.
She's one you have to pick between one or the other.
Yeah. And that was something that, again, was Star Ocean, the original one, worked exactly the same way. And then she has, like, her boyfriend or husband that can also be drafted.
Something like that.
No, Bowman's a different dude.
Is he? See, that once again, like I said, there's just little names or whatever. And once I look at them, I'm like, oh, yeah, these aren't too dissimilar. But you just, like, yeah.
And then you were mentioning DS before. She's sort of like he's the long-haired Bishonen fighter guy that he's sort of like Reyna has a crush on him, and then but Claude has sort of has a crush on her, and there's a little juvenile love triangle going on.
Yeah.
And then later in the game, there's Priestess, the little girl with the robot. And then Bowman, and there's like a newspaper reporter that joins you like in the second half of the game.
But we don't get Chisato. Welch in the original version.
Don't get who?
Welch.
Oh, yeah, because that was something stupid that Square Enix was doing with So Welch Vineyard's her name, right? She was a minor character, non-playable character in Star Ocean 3 that I think helmed the crafting system. And then somewhere after that, they're like, we're going to return this character into the recurring character in every Star Ocean game. So they added her in Star Ocean 4. And I want to say she's probably the worst thing about that game if there weren't already several other worse characters that are infinitely more annoying.
Welch is terrible. And I think naturally she's got some really broken nonsense about her too.
Oh, I mean, then when they did the PSP re-releases of Star Ocean 1 and 2, they went back and added her, and her presence in either of those games make any sense.
No,
if you want another character, then it's like, she is.
It's like the one girl in Fire, the merchant girl in Fire Emblem, who, like, she keeps getting added into things. It's like, wait, is she, like, 10,000 years old at this point?
Yeah, no, there's, like, there's just a bunch of her.
Oh, okay.
Suikoden did the same thing, but it kind of made sense in the
well, it
the
works for Suikoden because they point out in like 3, it's like, no, yeah, he's like a billion years old.
And no, the one that like just keeps accidentally transporting different places.
Oh, I'm not
the ditzy one, Vicky, I think her name is.
Yeah, not the guy who shows up in Suikoden 3.
No,
vampire, because there's vampires all over Suikoden.
Yeah, well, and Suikoden also takes place in like a couple hundred years, so it works.
But no, I mean, there's lots of those reoccurring characters. Like, Anna is more in Fire Emblem. She's more like Cid or something. She just kind of shows up. She's the same, but I think her appearance changes a bit. She's not the exact same.
I just remember, I thought, like, one game I played where she, like, brings up something, like, I might be really, really old.
Well, we're getting on time.
Yes.
So one more final thing I just want to get before wrapping it up was the music in this game, which I absolutely love. Motoi Sakuraba was one of the guys that he was big in working on Telenet games, and he played a big role in both the Tales series and the Star Ocean series. And
did he do Xenogears? Or is that a different guy?
Oh, that's Yasunori Mitsuda.
Okay,
he's also
those
Chrono
two
Trigger.
Are just those two are my favorites. So,
Sakuraba, he was like a very prog rock feel to his music, but like there's so many tracks in this game and they're all amazing. Like when I first got to like one of the first big missions of the game is when Claude has to rescue Reyna and you're going through the little underground whatever, and the music has like it sounds a lot like Ease, like a very like fast paced dungeon, like yeah. And even like the battle themes, I was like, it has random battles, but each time you're like, yeah, this is it, really gets you pumped up. That little intro is that the camera's flying down, you write video to do it, but it also has like really like the town themes, arena themes, is like a big flute sound to it, and like the overworld theme is very bombastic. It's like every track in this game is excellent. The same thing with the original Star Ocean; it's just amazing music.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun to play. We should probably say that the battles—they're fast-paced. A lot of stuff's going on. I just want to bring that up because, like you were mentioning, it's got random battles, but you're not like, ugh, another random battle. You're like, all right, let's kick some ass.
Yeah, I mean, it gets a little messy because, like you said, it's unbalanced. If you know how if you know how to break the system, then you can do it.
Yeah.
If not, then you might struggle like I did at the ending and didn't realize that you were supposed to like pick some certain character's pocket so that you could get the bunny shoes so you could actually run fast enough or something weird like that.
So I want to hit on that really quick. Even that, like even like listening to that, a lot of people get that in their head. Just watch out for a lot of the stat boosting skills in this game because they're super cheap on skill points. And like when I was replaying the PS1 version, I'm like, wait, I remember this skill. I wonder if it's really easy to break the game like this early on and you like just 10 times your damage output and you're like, oh, well, this is gonna be a cakewalk.
Yeah, like one of the reasons I think like there are the other Star Ocean games and people don't like those as much for two reasons. And I think it's because
fix it.
Well, they fix it. That's one of the main things. They kind of like, oh, let's kind of make it less broken. But it's not as fun because that's one of the reasons behind it.
Oh.
And it's also because this still kind of feels like the leftover of 16-bit era storytelling where it's not.
Yeah, you guys didn't really mention that the game is pre-rendered with quite high detail sprites as opposed to 3D, which you would have expected from the
time.
Yeah, the overworld.
I just love those. So.
The overworld is 3D. The battle scenes are 3D. But the backgrounds they're mostly exploring are pre-rendered. But yeah, as far as like storytelling, like the script isn't that big. The game isn't that long.
No.
Like, it's maybe like a 20-30 hour game. If you regular play through it.
It feels like a Super Nintendo game where they kind of like, wait, we have a whole nother disc we could use. All right, let's double it.
Yeah, so the first Star Ocean is super short. Like it's maybe Chrono Trigger length, if not shorter.
It's one of my favorite things too. And it's like, oh, wait, we got to end this game and we haven't talked about anything at the beginning.
Yeah, but you know, starting with Star Ocean 3, they got a lot more, you know, storyline focused as like Final Fantasy games did, and the writing is just bad, just really bad.
I know. I'm excited to finish that game again. Let me tell you. Okay. It still has the greatest plot twist of all time, Star Ocean 3.
All right.
All right. Star Ocean 2, though, is the best game of all time. Number negative 2?
If you want to put it way at the bottom of the list like that, negative 2, whatever that
It'll
is.
It'll just wrap That's, around.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're trying the thing. We're trying to start somewhere in the middle.
I know.
But what do we even have in the middle that's even close-ish to this? I have no idea. We have not.
I'm going to make you guys play Tales of the Abyss. I put it on that list, and I don't... I'm not sure.
No.
I don't think I'd like that. I don't think
Sorry, go ahead.
I don't think I like that game, but I kind of do. I have complicated feelings about it, so that's why I'm going to make you guys and drag you out.
Another 100 hours in Tales of Abyss. I can't even imagine.
Oh, God. What? I got 20 hours into it. I don't know if I can keep going.
I've beaten the game 6 times.
How?
It was the only thing on 3DS for a couple of years.
Yeah, I've been playing my 3DS on my commutes home, and I'm like, well, I could play this or I could take a nap. And a lot of times the nap ends up winning.
No. I beat every difficulty on 3DS. All the bonus bosses, everything.
But anyway, like, as far as quality, like, I still, as far as the PlayStation RPG era goes, like, Square's games were generally, I think, the best, even though that was a point of contention on message boards even back then. But Star Ocean, I think, is one of the better non-Square games, like that and Grandia.
I think the advantage for this one and Grandia, and to an extent Suikoden as well, they all lean towards, as you said, like, 16-bit RPGs. You know, Square felt like they were pushing something a little newer, so if you were a fan of the 16-bit ones, these ones were probably more your speed. They were what you were after personally.
Yeah, they're fast games. They get in, they get out, and you feel just great after they're done. You're not like,
ugh. This one's got good replayability too, apparently, since you've got like a lot of, you got two playable characters, and then you got all your other party members, you got choices. That's pretty good, you know, it's not just like a straight through, which puts it more closer to, I guess, Seiken Densetsu 3, which forces you to go through many times with all the different party types.
Holy smokes!
It's not as big as that, but you still got to do it a couple times to really see everything.
Yeah, and it's got a lot at the end, too. It's cool.
We got Kingsfield 3 at 200 at the moment. Better or worse?
Better.
Oh, good. Well, you can just start going up from there. I don't mind. You guys are just going to sit there while you read the list. They're just going to leave this dead
side.
Let's jump almost to the other. Secret of Mana. Or Oath and Fulgana. There we go. Let's go with Kurt here. Let's throw Oath and Fulgana at him.
Oh, God. I can't believe you guys ranked that well low. But I mean,
I listened to that recording and we just kind of pushed you around. You're like, hey, you can put it there. And I'm because like, we usually, poor Kurt.
Just use the recording at like 2 in the morning. Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, that's kind of, this is in strong company now, to be honest. You know, you got 138 is the Oath of Fulgana, directly below it is Star Fox and Secret of Mana, and above it is Gunmute and Yakuza. You know, these are strong games.
Yeah, this is a good spot. I would say it's, you know, like Dragon Quest V is at 108. I think Dragon Quest V is better.
Okay, well, if you think that's some sort of
approximate... What does Faxanadu at 127? You know what? I'm not even going to bother with that one.
I remember Faxanadu, and I remember just being wowed by the fact that it's a game. It's very distinctive, a very interesting one.
Okay.
There's nothing like Faxanadu.
All right, so Kurt, better or worse than Oath and Fulgana?
I mean, I would say it's worse, but I mean, that already was too low in my opinion. But I would say like 120, 130-ish is a good spot for this game.
Yeah.
Let's look at something a little bit trickier. Monster World 4 is at 121. A lot of people like Monster World 4. I didn't think it was as good as Monster World itself, but it's a great game.
Marwyn's at 120. The problem is I really like Star Ocean, so at this point we're in
right.
No, I know. So I'm just gonna say you guys pick a spot, not much lower than Faxanadu.
I'll give that to you. I would say it's better than Vandal Hearts. I have strong feelings on Blue Stinger, so.
Yeah, no, like I said.
Well, someone has to have strong feelings on Blue Stinger.
You guys did. I keep pitching weird stuff to Xerxes. I'm like, dude, let's do a Blue Stinger fan book. Let's make a t-shirt with, what's his name? Dogs Bauer. I'm totally going to do that.
We should definitely do a Dogs Bauer themed t-shirt that's kind of just subtle enough so we don't need any licensing for it.
You know? Yeah, but who owns the rights
to us?
Climax Games folded into someone else, didn't they?
Anyway,
we can get that one out later. Yeah. If you own the Blue Stinger franchise, please get in touch with us.
Okay.
Do you think it should go? Is this gonna? People gonna be mad if we put it directly below Blue Stinger, directly above Vandal Hearts?
I'm Vandalhearts. I don't have high feelings on, so I gotta say it's better than Vandalhearts.
Ooh,
I like Vandalhearts quite a bit, but I could see this one probably being a bit more of an achievement.
Yeah, I like this one more than Vandalhearts. I mean, like I said, this is one of my favorite games, but let's be fair and just put it. Yeah, it's better than Vandalhearts.
I mean, it's better than Vandalhearts, is it? I mean, I know. What about Mappy, Kurt? I know you're a Mappy boy.
I am a Mappy boy.
Mappy's at 122.
Yeah. Now, I like
ridiculous.
I play Mappy pretty regularly, so I play it a lot more than I do Star Ocean, so I got to give that the props.
All right, there we go. We finally have a ceiling.
So 124 has Sam and Max Hit the Road. You guys have an opinion on that?
I really like Sam and Max Hit the Road, but I think it's one of the weaker LucasArts games, so...
I think it's the funniest as far as design-wise. Yeah, it's one of the weaker
ones. Yeah, it's funny as hell, but I mean, it's not Monkey Island. It's not Day of the Tentacle.
Star Ocean's pretty clever, but is it cleverer than 999? Or is, we've written it here, 9 person, 9 hours, 9 doors, which I guess is the real name.
Yeah, thank you, Bob.
No problem. Because, I mean, that's a story-heavy game. This is a JRPG, so there's lots of story.
I've never played it, so that's on you guys.
I'd just say 124.
Above
Sam and Max, between Sam and Max and 9 persons.
All right, I've got no problem with that. We can wrap this up. Boom. We can put it there. That's where Star Ocean goes. It's going above 999 and above Sam and Max Hit the Road at 124. Thanks, Clade, for joining us. If he sounds like he's dying, he actually is. he's been sick, so we had to... he's powered through it, so I don't want to hear any complaints about him, like, you know,
well, that's
having
good.
To breathe. And I mean, I think Star Ocean is definitely, when I played it, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. Like, I think this one's worth checking out as far as the PlayStation 1 catalog of JRPGs goes. I think this does stand quite tall.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.